There were a number of original sins when the internet was originally built.
What do you think about the current state of decentralization of Polkadot?
There is a limit to how much of these treasuries that can be spent in any specific time period.
During our last talk, we did have to cut something huge, and it was, I think, this other thing you're alluding to. Do you want to say the name?
Sure. So,
Space Monkeys, blasting off with Peter Morick. It's really nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be here.
We had you on the podcast several months ago, and then it was gone. You just disappeared.
Yeah. What? Something with YouTube must have, you know, it must have hit those filters.
The indecency
it
filters.
It must have been something about the pornographic material
and content
that was discussed.
I thought we cut it out, but it was
too much for YouTube.
They knew it was going to happen. Yeah.
It was... For those that were able to see it, probably quite informative, but you'll probably be the only ones that have that opportunity, so cherish it.
We were talking about morphing when the story first hit the scene, and then recently we just had Daniel in front of Congress. Yep. We had an episode on it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
Yeah, overall the hearing was more or less what we've come to expect from these sorts of hearings. We saw some of the same in this AI hearing that happened the other day with Sam Altman, although I would say that Sam Altman's going for regulatory capture in AI much more aggressively than the crypto industry went for regulatory capture. That said, there was a lot of interesting conversation. You understand the complexities and then understand the language that the regulatory processes and that these elected officials used to dance around subjects, you can and did get the sense that they were starting to understand more about the regulatory process that these protocols find themselves in, whether they want to be in them or not, and the language that the lawyers that manage these regulatory processes use. So you heard the Congress people mention the word morphing. And so they've obviously started to learn and be educated on what that actually means. But in terms of like getting to a point where the industry is aligned on that concept and converges around supporting the concept of morphing as a standard for crypto, or at least one of the proven paths towards more regulatory clarity. There's still obviously a lot of work to do. I've mentioned this in the past publicly. Sticky situations with regulators and with Congress that crypto law finds itself in today is because of things that crypto law has done to date, right? There's not all lawyers, but many lawyers in crypto that have given a specific set of guidance parameters to different teams, founders, foundations over the past, say, 5 or 10 years, and their careers are tied to that guidance having been good at the time, or at least not being like totally wrong.
Yeah.
So you can see that there's a lot of conflicting both legal theories, but then also conflicting sort of legal professionals who want to ensure that their reading of the tea leaves, so to speak, 5 years ago isn't now revealed to have been like totally wrong. So, I mean, this is it's a difficult thing. There's obviously a lot of different actors who have been working a lot to get their sort of preferred point of view across to regulators or elected officials. But it was good to see some of that language that we talked about, the couple of members say morphing specifically and being sort of open to hearing a conversation or participating in a conversation about what token reclassification like morphing might look like. But in terms of getting very specific and very strong, as lawyers would say, bright line guidance on where crypto protocols should go, there's still a lot of work to be done.
I thought it was interesting that a few of the members really wanted to keep the conversation about cryptocurrency. They really wanted to keep it in the realm of speculation.
The monetary nature or the dynamics of crypto will always lead back to, especially people like elected officials, focusing on that aspect of the technology. So let's not ignore it, but still try to get the broader like Web3 privacy support for everyday internet users. This idea around the fact that, you know, the internet was broken from the start. There were a number of original sins when the internet was originally built. One was the advertising model in social and news media, and the entire internet is, I think most people agree, one of the original sins. It creates a broken structure for the development of a free and open internet and supports the development and growth of giant companies like Google. Can we turn back the clock on that? No, but you do see more and more companies turning to things like subscription services, which are made much easier by things like crypto payment rails, which is another of the original sins of the development of the internet. Back when the internet was in its infancy, there was a project to build in payments into the internet, those core protocols many, many years ago. And I believe it was MasterCard that shut it down at the time. Like, so all the credit card companies were more or less at the table discussing this. And it was at the time, I believe it was MasterCard who said, why would we have a shared payment network? We have our own payment network that we've built in, invested in, and playing on the same rails as our competitors, Visa, Amex, whoever else, isn't advantageous to our business. So they killed that project at the time.
Okay, we'll stay on this track just for one second more. What do you think about the Fed coin?
Central bank digital currency, Fed coin. I like the idea a lot better than mint the coin, the modern monetary theory idea to mint a $1 trillion platinum coin. I think that is not a very economically well-designed.
Would Fedcoin stop that? When could you just keep minting?
You could keep minting, but it doesn't necessarily change the economic or fiscal policy the way that minting a $1 trillion coin would intend to do. It would basically be, using some advances in technology, using blockchain, but in a very centralized way to create a better underlying system for the transfer of dollars. So right now, if you want to actually transfer dollars, you need to use a wire transfer, which costs a bunch of money and takes like a full day. And for like cross-jurisdictional, cross-border wire transfers, like it literally still requires like people to like sign off on documents and stuff. And it's like this should have all been automated a long time ago. So I would assume that the Fed coin would basically just be that sort of low level remittance layer for US dollars that would be centrally managed and minimally impactful on all of the financial infrastructure built on top.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. I think that if the Fed adopts a crypto-based protocol to settle dollars, it is an explicit support of the technology. And then the bigger question is then you move to why elected officials are so against the public open source permissionless version of this technology. And then do you understand why it's political?
So in the hearing, as you said, morphing was mentioned a few times, right? And the big, just to review this real quick, it really comes down to decentralization.
In terms of the process that the Web3 Foundation took and that how we can comply with existing rules and regulations and still launch a crypto network in a decentralized, open source, permissionless manner, which is, I think, we proved with Polkadot. And part of that, as I've mentioned numerous times more publicly, as Angie and Josh talked about, I think on either the episode with you or one of the Twitter spaces, we explicitly in the claims process for Dot publicly notified that at the time of launch, Dot could be considered a security or is considered a security because under that test, under the Howey test, very smart regulators, lawyers, and other professionals can make very strong arguments that it does, in fact, any crypto asset that's offered in the typical fashion is potentially a security under the Howey test. So you understand that you have a certain set of rules that exist that you need to comply with as you're launching the network. And then the SEC has given guidance on the morphing process. The SEC, through the Dow report and their digital assets framework, have given guidance on how you can navigate both being a potentially a security at some points and falling under that classification based on the Howey test and other rules and regulations that have existed for many, many decades. But then as you launch and decentralize the network, reclassify that token as no longer a security or not a commodity also potentially. In this case, we're reclassifying
not a commodity
as software.
Gotcha.
Also, it also doesn't necessarily fit the classifications of a commodity either. And at this point, it's, I think, better to think about tokens that have gone through a morphing process as something like getting AWS credits to run a instance in their cloud network, right? If you're buying or using Dot, you're using it to access a protocol that's going to do some computing, run some application, run some technology, or benefit for you, some tool for your business or family or personal life. So it is a rather new concept.
Well, one thing is clear about redefining the token is this characteristic of decentralization, right? Decentralization is a spectrum that we're on, not all the way to one side. What do you think about the current state of decentralization of Polkadot? I'm talking like OpenGov. I'm talking about huge actors such as Parity still having quite a bit of influence. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I'd say two ways to look at this. First, sort of by the numbers, Polkadot lined up against other protocols.
Anything else.
But then sort of Polkadot lined up against the ideals.
Good one.
So lined up against other protocols, I would say that Polkadot is in a very good place in terms of decentralization. Many people who watch this program are aware that Polkadot has the highest Nakamoto coefficient in crypto, getting up around 100 individual actors you would need to overtake in order to take control of the network. For reference, the next closest is, I think, in the 30s, and I don't even remember what network it is. And then, like, the Ethereums and Bitcoins of the world have Nakamoto coefficients of, like, 1 or 2 or 3 based on mining pools or single massive holders or liquid staking protocols that theoretically have the crypto economic power to manipulate consensus. So we're in a very good place in Polkadot.
Any regulator looking at the landscape, there's just so many to knock down before you get to Polkadot.
Definitely true. And I mean, you wouldn't necessarily need, I mean, to like in Ethereum's case, right? Like if you could figure out a way to like ensure that the liquid staking protocols and a couple of other entities have a path to decentralization, you maybe don't need to take any action against Ethereum as a whole. You can work with one of these specific companies to get there, which also goes to show that Ethereum is rather well decentralized because it is like, I mean, I'm sure Lido would listen to the Ethereum Foundation, but it is truly a separate, independent entity of the Ethereum Foundation or Consensus, who tends to be the two major sort of power players in the Ethereum ecosystem, which is something that I think we in the Polkadot ecosystem do need to do better at, right? Is getting more independent companies that have strong incentive alignments, but also strong independent characteristics from Parity or Web3 Foundation to further decentralize Polkadot from a corporate perspective, from a regional perspective, from a regulatory perspective. The more companies that we get up and running, either building parachains or helping support the Polkadot ecosystem in various regions, the better, because it does create a stronger, more resilient decentralization factor within the actual companies that are building and deploying technologies on the network, not just the holders of the coin or the people that are managing and operating the nodes.
Right. How do you feel about how governance is rolling out? And the treasury, use of the treasury.
So
you've been a little vocal on that lately.
For sure. Yeah. I spent a lot of time obviously starting out in crypto and Ethereum governance, or trying to help build out some tools and rules of the road for Ethereum governance, which is a bit of a difficult task, especially for it to be something that like the founder of the blockchain, Vitalik, is very against and very vocally against, and wasn't part of the social contract of that network at its launch. So it's part of what really attracted me to Polkadot originally was the fact that it was explicitly a governed chain, where the users of the network are the ones who are supposed to have the decision-making power over how the network has developed over time. I think governance version one, council, technical committee, was reasonable and functional to get Polkadot up and running, part of this progressive decentralization, the spectrum of decentralization. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the first version of governance, while ultimately the token holders did have or do have the power over the network, the processes were set up in a way that made it a little bit more nimble to be able to fix bugs and get parachains up and running. And now that we're at a point where the network is live and parachains are live and are more or less able to operate without too much sort of like crisis bug fix sort of work, we can and should move to a governance system that is even more decentralized. Now, Gov2 on its face is more decentralized. Obviously, we don't have this strong central council anymore, but at the same time, it potentially allows large holders to sway more power without being as sort of out in the open. So it's an interesting trade-off. I think Gov2, as it was launched today, is very much like a Gov2 version 1.0. Okay. And you talk about like the treasury spend. Part of Gov2 is opening up the treasury spend more, making it easier potentially to deploy funds from the treasury. But as we've seen on Kusama,
it's a whole lot harder, actually.
It's getting harder. And also people are sort of speaking up both vocally and with their votes, say like there is a limit to how much of these treasuries that can be spent in any specific time period, especially when the security of the network is based on the value of DOT as a whole. And if you are dispersing a huge amount of the treasury every year to hopefully facilitate growth, you're also putting a huge amount of market pressure on the token, people who need to turn around and sell it to pay vendors or contractors or companies. Ideally, that transaction would happen in DOT as far down that line as possible, which could be possible or should be more possible considering the regulatory position that we're in. If people gain confidence in that position, you should be able to, say, pay employees directly in DOT onshore in the United States. You should be able to run a decent amount of a business's operations in DOT and pay vendors in DOT. And that should hopefully also lead to you having to, as an ecosystem, sell less DOT on the market to facilitate teams, companies building mm-hmm. alleviate some of the sell pressure, mm-hmm. which then brings the price of DOT up, which then allows you still by spending, you know, 5 to 10% of the treasury, but makes that 5%, 5 to 10% of the treasury worth more.
Yeah.
Right. So they're now in this hoping to get to a find some equilibrium and understanding in the community what an equilibrium between treasury spends and the market dynamics are in order to ensure we're not shooting ourselves in the foot saying like, this is a great project for the ecosystem. This is something that's really like needed, but it's going to cost $50 million a year. Funding that through the treasury could kill the treasury, kill the token price, and kill the security of the network if yeah. not properly managed. Mm-hmm. So this is when you get into reforms to governance that we could see over time, mm-hmm. right? Is the idea that like once we understand what an equilibrium might be in terms of treasury spends, like that could be the sort of thing that is passed as a strict limit, right?
It looks like we're changing course though. I mean, with governance one, it was very optimistic spending.
Yeah.
Like it was hard to find a spend proposal that didn't go through actually.
Yeah.
Regardless of the content of it. But we are really slowing down now. We're pretty much grinding to a halt for spending. It's also hard to plan in a highly speculative market like this too. Like,
right. Well, I mean, on currently on Kusama, the spending halts could be attributed to a single actor.
Yeah. It is.
Which is an interesting thing also to observe. And probably something that should be reviewed and addressed before
at the same
it
time,
rolls
though,
out on that, Polkadot.
That single actor is encouraging more actors to enter the game as
true.
Well.
True.
You know,
it's exciting to see, even though it's frustrating for many people participating in the treasury process. I think overall it's a net positive because controversy is in fact good. Mm-hmm. It gets people to engage and actually think about why this individual or group is either just opposed to the proposals that they're shooting down or philosophically opposed to spending in these areas specifically. Mm-hmm. And also proves that, like, you know, these governed protocols is a valuable tool in understanding and developing a network that is decentralized and is able to consolidate the views and desires of a large group around spending to support that group's goals. This would not be possible in Ethereum governance, right?
Sure.
All the spending would go through or none of it would go through, but we wouldn't have any clear signals on why or who and how to fix it, which was one of the bigger problems when dealing with fund recovery and other Ethereum governance issues, was like signaling intent, signaling stake, signaling whatever else your sentiment is on an issue was so opaque to the point where people weren't willing to engage in the process because they would never have any trust that people's views are actually what they would eventually express in like a vote. So by having these tools from day one, we're working from a place where at least we know the outcomes and the actors and what steps they're taking to stop the outcome or create the outcome that they desire and are able to sort of, you know, work towards a solution.
Ecosystem actors, treasury, what's missing? Where to from here?
Well, so I mentioned this earlier. There needs to be a lot more, not just parachain teams, but teams that are helping facilitate Polkadot as a protocol on its own without, you know, a specific focus, right? So like whether it's a team that's going to be focused on a specific region or a specific vertical, right? Where there's like gaming companies in the Polkadot ecosystem that are maybe don't own a parachain themselves and have no interest in building a parachain, or maybe don't even have any original games themselves, right? They're just going out and building games for existing gaming teams and white gloving them on to parachain X, Y, or Z.
Sure, yeah.
Teams in specific regions, whether, you know, talking China, India, obviously really large growth areas. Polkadot doesn't have much of a physical footprint in the United States, which is something I'm working on. We talk a lot about like crypto being a remote first world. I don't really buy that. And I don't think community and I don't think companies can really be built in a remote first environment. Mm-hmm. Culture is what you make of it in the room with people. And if you're not in the room with people, I'd say at least 4 days a week, you're going to lose the opportunity to build really strong culture and community. I think one of the big things that Polkadot needs in general is just more gathering places and more companies and communities to literally go and see people and sit with people and work with people on building out the network. So
you said you're working on this footprint. What does that look like?
Got a couple of businesses in the works. A couple of companies have helping incubate. So I have over the past couple months been reducing my role within Parity and Web3. Still helping on a couple of sort of key projects, but overall been sort of refocusing my work on North America. I've helped incubate MuFi, who you had Spencer on the show. They have some exciting updates coming up, and advise a couple of other companies in the Polkadot ecosystem through my new advisory firm, Protocol Strategies.
So this you're advising?
People
pay you for your wisdom?
Something like that, yes. Okay. I've been a consultant and advisor to corporate executives and elected officials going back my entire career. So whether that's supporting the leadership teams of companies that are building and launching parachains, whether it is advising investors that are looking to deploy capital into the Polkadot ecosystem, and then other, say, governance participants or people wanting to set up like staking businesses in the Polkadot ecosystem, I'd have, you know, both the knowledge and the people around me to help those companies achieve their goals. So excited about that on the more Web3 native side, and then working with a couple of other folks in the Polkadot ecosystem to build out more infrastructure for community and companies who want to come into the Polkadot ecosystem focused in North America in a grander scale.
Okay, so this is kind of new. During our last talk, for those who saw it, we did have to cut something huge. And it was, I think, this other thing you're alluding to, that you're working with other people around the country. Do you want to say the name?
Sure. So myself, Alex Hatoum from Spacewalk Ventures, and Sumi, Irvin from Polka House, OpenDive, Kiomi, Solana ecosystem, but he had built a parachain before parachains were even a thing. David, the CTO of Sumi, is also part of the group. He's got a significant network of engineers. He comes from the Northwest tech world, Amazon and the like. So there's a lot of people that have very strong engineering backgrounds. And Yoon Kim, who's works with Alex, so out on the West Coast, are forming a group called Tread Group, where we are going to be focused on traction for Polkadot in North America. So we are planning on launching by the end of June, starting out with at least one node in the active validator set, which we will be using to bootstrap, finance the initial operations of Tread Group, get some initial key hires on board in business development and engineering. And that will be focused on more of the Web2 enterprise, traditional SaaS sales world in tech. And we'll have that team based in an office, in person, full time in San Francisco.
Cool.
Hopefully have that all set up no later than, say, end of Q3 of this year. So we'll be in the active set. We'll be working on a couple projects to get off the ground and get things moving, and then hiring out a team based on those initial wins and some folks we already know that we really want to work with. There's a number of people from our previous lives, obviously coming from a business and policy background, have a lot of friends from that world who are eager to make a move, 35 to 40 year olds looking for something more interesting than corporate consulting, that we're really excited about helping support Polkadot and the broader Web3 ecosystem in North America. So we'll have that team up and running sooner than later. As a part of that, we also want to start running like regular meetups in all the tech hubs in North America. PokaHouse has a world tour hackathon that is an approved treasury expenditure. We would also hire, you know, like the operations staff to help run that through Tread Group. Alex and I have been involved over the last couple months in helping get a couple of these bigger projects across the line in the Polkadot ecosystem. So excited about the opportunity to then take those wins that we've had as an ecosystem over the past couple months and say, we can do this for you, client XYZ. And we have a team in San Francisco that's right down the street from you. And we're going to white glove this thing from concept to deployment plus maintenance going forward. So you can have your product and you can eat it too.
So you're finding Polkadot utility for Web2 companies.
There will be some probably sexier projects in there, but the focus will be much less on like really glitzy and glamorous clients and more on projects and companies that will bring real lasting economic activity,
right,
value and users to the ecosystem, right? So like,
as opposed to like Starbucks,
yeah,
I like mean, headline things like that.
Some of that would be nice to sprinkle in, but talk about like, you know, the real estate investment trust market, like very not sexy, but lots of value and something that can provably be tokenized. Certainly something where we believe we can make a really strong impact early on Polkadot, and then go and use that early success to bring more people into the ecosystem. Like, people don't get all hot and bothered over REITs in crypto, but it is a good,
some people do,
viable, yeah, you know, they aren't the vocal ones on crypto Twitters, put it that way. So a lot of those sorts of folks where it could be one user, but hundreds of millions of dollars in value on chain. And then, you know, we could also say, do the inverse where it's a ton of users, but not a lot of value. But, you know, long-term sustainable user bases that will be using Polkadot in the background and maybe not even know it, whether it's a B2B or B2C platform. There's a lot of different places where we think this technology can and should be integrated. We'll be, you know, deploying resources to do that.
What advice would you give to the people who maybe have smaller bags, they're in smaller communities, but they have big enthusiasm about the ecosystem, right? We can't all start a Tread group. We're not all in the rooms that maybe you guys are in.
Well, what role do they have to play? Starting a Tread group. So if you have some talents or background in enterprise SaaS sales or project management, or are an engineer who understands Substrate to and or Rust to any degree, send your resumes our way as soon as we as soon as we're up and running with a Twitter account and a LinkedIn, and we'll be happy to chat about opportunities to work directly in the ecosystem. I think obviously like the ambassador programs are great ways to get involved with specific projects that you're interested in. And yeah, I mean, just in general, like show up. I got into crypto just showing up to meetups in New York in 2016, 2017. I was already into crypto, but like into crypto, just show up and offer to do stuff, and you'll find yourself in the room eventually if you're good enough.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. Just showing up. And whatever talent you have, figuring out a way to bring it to bear to support the ecosystem or team or vision that you support was all you really should do.
Well, hey, thanks for letting us come into your home again.
First and, time on the pink
check
mic.
Out what's up. Yeah, and Mike, nice mic, by the way. Podcast coming soon?
Podcast coming soon. Nice. Maybe even two. You had that conversation with Ursula about the Barca negotiations.
Yeah.
That could be a pretty interesting story to tell.
Would be a great one. All right, we'll stay tuned. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thanks.